freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We didn't pass it on to our children in the bloodstream. The only way they can inherit the freedom we have known is if we fight for it, protect it, defend it, and then hand it to them with the well-taught lessons of how they in their lifetime must do the same. And if you and I don't do this, then you and I may well spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it once was like in America when men were free.
Welcome back, everyone, to Patriot Coalition Live. I'm Matthew Nugent.
And I'm Jason Marocek.
Thank you for joining us today. Our goal is to bring you a timeless resource to teach about the U.S. Constitution and the proper role of government, the importance of America's Judeo-Christian heritage, and how to defend against threats to our republic. We want to engage members of our armed forces, veterans, first responders, and patriots who support them in their noble professions. Weekly episodes are available Tuesday mornings wherever you get your podcasts or at patriotcoalitionlive.com. Also, your support is very important to us. Please support us at patriotcoalitionlive.com/support. You all ready? Let's do this. Okay, today's episode, we're talking with you about the case for liberty, what inspired America. Okay, this is the first part of a two-part series, okay? Part A of, and part B next time, one or two. And basically what we're talking about is what led to the creation of America. Now, to kind of set things in place here to give you how we're going to approach it, because there were a few books that in about three major books and groups of writings that inspired America to be the kind of country we are. One of those is John Locke's Second Treatise. Okay, it is very erudite, very intellectual. I have not read it. Jason has read it. And Jason, do you have it with you?
I do, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Take a look at this, guys. Okay, that's the first and second treatise. Okay, you can see, look at that right here. Oh my gosh, thank you. I haven't read it. You've heard of Cliff's Notes. Well, I have read Jason's Notes. Thank you for that. Eventually, I will read it, and I didn't in the past because it's pretty deep, okay? What's interesting is the concepts that are in there, which were radical at the time. Yes, radical. There is a pedagogic use for the word radical in terms of education. And where did I pull that word pedagogic? I don't know, man. All these stuff.
Speaking of erudite, good grief.
Anyway, guys, what's interesting is what is in John Locke's Second Treatise is natural to us today, but it's not how it used to be. Okay, so for you to understand history, it's important to understand the context of history. So all of us should study history. All of us patriots should study history. But to do it properly, you have to look at where they were at the time. Okay, now what we're going to do is we're going to paint a picture of what the typical American colonist was. Their life was like, and the challenges they faced in the context of, England. Now, and then we're going to discuss some of the greatest books and writings that inspired our founding fathers to create what we know today as America. So let's paint a picture. You ready? Pre-1775, the reason why 1775, because that's when the United States started firing back on the Brits, and that's when we said, stop, okay? Now, a typical colonist farmer in Massachusetts, say, faced this. You are forced to buy goods from British companies, and you are taxed for the privilege to buy products from basically monopolies. You're forced to quarter troops in your house. They kick you out of your – basically, they live in your house. You know, they have barracks. Well, back then, the peasants – that's what we American colonists were, okay? They were peasants, and – they needed a place to live. It was cold. They'd go in your house, take it over. You'd feed them, and you wouldn't get paid a penny. And if the British assaulted or murdered a family member, they would get off scot-free. They would just get off. If you complain about their crimes against you, your family, the British could burn your house, burn your barns, burn your crops, destroy your livelihood without recourse. Let's say you're a fisherman. I mean, Massachusetts, it's on the East Coast, the Atlantic. The British attack your boat, forcefully conscript you, or maybe your son. into service to the British Navy and even fight against your own town. No trials by jury. Your fate is decided by a judge who's loyal to the king, not to a constitution, to a king, King George III at the time. You might be compelled, meaning forced or tortured, into confession of a crime you didn't even commit. They'll haul you to trial in England on bogus charges. This is real, folks. And where can you find it? In the Declaration of Independence. We cite our sources. It's in the Declaration of Independence. There are 27 specific, what the founders called, grievances. It's powerful reading if you can paint a picture, and that's where it was. So what transformed and inspired a group of 13 colonies, really 13 separate nations, from being oppressed by the British, a monarchy, to become one of the most powerful free countries in the world? In fact, when I was a kid, I thought, and I asked myself, why is America, what made America so great? Is it our resources? Is it our soil? What is it? Well, you're going to get the answer now. In a very concise form, it deserves more study, but this is really beneficial. Why didn't we become an oppressor nation? Why wasn't President George Washington King George? I guess I don't know if you'd call him the fourth or you'd call him the first. I don't know. King George Washington or King Washington, you know, His Majesty Washington. Why didn't we have our own monarchy? Where did the ideas of liberty and freedom come from? You know, we didn't become an oppressive nation throughout the past couple hundred years. We helped free nations. Okay, World War II is a great example. The Korean War is a great example. What inspired our founding fathers to create the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution? Now, Jason, it seems like it took us humans and the founding fathers, okay, many, many years to get to a civil society, okay, that recognized this radical concept, okay? All right, you guys ready for this? Check out this radical concept, okay? All men are created equal. I'll say that again.
Doesn't get as simple as that.
All men are created equal. And it's funny, Jason, you say that. You know, Jason and I, we discuss things all the time, Constitution, today's issues. And I think, what do you think about this? And he goes, and his approach is, he says, well, I just look at the simple way, but he understands the foundation, he can do it. And he puts it in a few powerful short sentences or even a few short words. So, so tell us about where did liberty come from and why were men not always free?
Well, you've asked some very, very good questions. All of those are kind of pertinent to what we're talking about today. Liberty is, in and of itself, has been around since creation, right? Since we were placed on this earth, since God created us, liberty has been there. So liberty has not been an evolution. It is really man's understanding and willingness to embrace liberty that has been the evolution over time. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a quote Thomas Jefferson had in 1774. Mm-hmm. This is from his summary view of the rights of British America. He said, "The God who gave us liberty, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, the God who gave us life gave us liberty at the same time." And again, so it's as simple as that. He gave us life and he gave us liberty. It's been around,
Who gave us that? Was it the King George who gave us that?
That would be God.
That would be God.
Right. Not man, not anybody
like
else.
That would be God.
Yeah. So the God who gave us life gave us liberty at the same time. Mm-hmm. So you think about, you know, previous experiments with liberty that have existed mm-hmm. over time, you know, they failed because they were based on what a leader or a government or man gave to the people. So they were mm-hmm. the premise was that man or government gave liberty to the people. Not what God gave them. And you know, you think about situations or civilizations like Rome and Greece, mm-hmm. they essentially glorified man. They weren't pursuing what God put us on this earth to do, right? They mm-hmm. were not pursuing the good things in life. They were just trying to please themselves. And so in order to do that, that's why they caused people to only have the liberties that they were granted mm-hmm. by man. Mm-hmm. But as we've said in past episodes, and I'm sure you'll say it with me,
what man, what man gives us,
man can take it away, right?
Straight up. So,
and that is what has been the downfall, at least both in understanding and in execution of all these previous experiments with liberty. So it's really only after a series of pretty significant events that we were able to evolve our understanding of what this God-given liberty entails. And that started with the Magna Carta in 1215. It included the invention, the creation of the Gutenberg printing press, the Protestant Reformation in 1517, and ultimately it culminated with the Enlightenment in the 17th and 18th centuries, with some of the writings of like some of these folks that we're going to talk about today, like John Locke and Montesquieu. So let me take a step back. So we talk about the Magna Carta, right? So in 1215, these were a series of, you know, over time, the monarchs had been presumed to be essentially placed there by God. And so anything they said or did was paramount to what man wanted, right? So in about 1215, though, some of the people started to believe that, look, they're only in power because we haven't revolted, and therefore we ought to start standing up for ourselves and demanding at least certain rights that we inherently have. And that's what the Magna Carta was about. They listed a bunch of different rights that they felt that they had, that they that the kings, the monarchs, were there to protect. And so fast forward to, you know, the Gutenberg press is developed, and then there's the Protestant Reformation, where you have the theses posted on the door. And then these political theorists, these folks who took these ideas and started to write about them. So coupled with the printing press, now you had these ideas that were not just in a couple people's heads, but they could be circulated among larger populations. So, you know, again.
Can I add something to that,
yeah,
Jason?
Yeah, go ahead.
So one of the greatest things we can do for our country now is to restore, in addition to constitutional governance, but patriotic education, okay? Like Jason's mentioned, you know, these freedoms and liberty came from God. Life came from God. And, you know, if we go backwards in our education, people will start to think, oh, the government gave me these rights. So we need to continue these. Also, through censorship, what's going on right now today, through social media, you know, what I think I might want to buy is an old hard copy of definitely a dictionary, maybe an encyclopedia set, because nowadays, since everything's on the internet, it can be changed instantaneously.
Right.
And what we know as history, it'll just be a rumor. So right. what we're doing here is a step to keep people educated. Thanks, Jason.
Yeah, no. That's a great point. In fact, I've got over on my bookshelf, I've got, I think, a little a primer on what was taught to primary school students. I want to say early 1900s or something, and it's
really
it's fascinating the types of things they were expected to know. Mm-hmm. So getting back to this concept of, you know, how over time, you know, the concept of liberty was embraced by eventually Americans. It came from these political philosophers. Probably the leading political philosophers of those times were John Locke and Montesquieu. And so they put these ideas on paper, and as I said, you know, circulated them thanks to the printing press. And, you know, Locke's treatise, which are essentially essays with a systematic approach to how you think about a subject. He put these into production and published them. And it started talking about how these liberties come from God. And they started to take hold and with larger and larger numbers of people. You know, these truths are really handed down to us in the Bible. So having said that, what was left to be reconciled with these people was on one side, you have the political systems at the time, which the premise was that a king was in charge, the king was sovereign. But then you have these political philosophers who were having, as you said, these radical ideas that our rights and our liberties are granted to us by God. And so you had this, how do we reconcile these two ideas?
Yeah. So you made an interesting point that the larger numbers of people in the population accepted and became accustomed to the proposition that liberty is a gift from God, that people started to demand it. Now, similarly, if you take God out of a society, you know, you won't be able to say liberty comes from God because they don't acknowledge God. So they'll start to think, no, liberty comes from the country. So you got things like these shutdowns right now. If you guys are playing this 10 years from now, you know, viewing this 10 years from now, it is, you know, November 2020, a couple, you know, E plus, you know, 16, I think. What's it, 16 or 17? Election day plus 17. We haven't completed the election and we're going through COVID still, or at least they allege we're going through COVID and they require lockdowns. So people's God-given rights of liberty and freedom and life are being infringed upon. And fortunately, I live in Florida and people are starting to give certain signs to at least our great governor, DeSantis, are saying we're not having the lockdowns. Our people are responsible. If they feel they need a mask or they're in a compromised physical state, they won't necessarily go outside unless it's absolutely necessary. Whereas in states like California, it's draconian measures. Okay. Yeah. And we'll talk about that more on the next part of this. But the question is, what does it take to embrace freedom?
Well, as you said, Matt, I mean, early on, you painted a fantastic picture. And I have to say, you do a great job of framing the context of our conversations. All those things that you listed, some of those 27 grievances, that's what it takes. It takes being oppressed. In this case, the American colonies were enduring all of those things. So that's one thing. I mean, you have to be oppressed to some degree. And even in our Declaration of Independence, it has a section in there that talks about, you know, man will, and I'm paraphrasing it, man will endure quite a lot before he actually starts to do something, but he does
that
have to
is
endure.
So true.
Yeah.
And in fact, I will tell you this, guys, I used to be a nice guy. Now I'm a patriot, a freedom fighter. Don't get me wrong. I don't love people less. In fact, I love people more. After
Which
getting
is
your
why
rear
you fight
end
so hard for them.
Yes. And after you're getting my rear end handed to me so many times by bullies. And if you think bullies when you're in school are bad, wait till you grow up. They get a lot worse. And it requires everything that you have. So I'm willing to fight now. And you know, and really, and Jason and I are doing that. And you know, guys, for us to turn the tide here and really, you know, restore constitutional governance, restore our liberties, get back patriotic education, it's gonna take an army. Yeah. And your support in sharing this is vital. We need more conservative podcasts. We need more conservative voices. We need more people saying, check this out. In fact, to that point, I know I'm going a little off script, but what Jason and I are doing, our scripts, you know, we've got one, but one of the things we're going to do on our website is we're going to have a repository, basically, of different videos that YouTube or Google either censor or put way down on page 37, because they will be taken out of our history, okay? We're going to do this for historic writings, you know, not just the Declaration of Independence, and we're going to make it available to you by the dates, by the topics, because it's necessary. Okay.
Yeah.
You'll hear more about that, but
and to your point, you know, we already have some of that. You know, each of our show notes, you know, any references that we have, or we made, you know, quotes or whatever, you'll see on our show notes for each episode.
Absolutely.
But Matt, you were asking, I mean, the question was, you know, what does it take to embrace freedom? Mm-hmm. You know, the first thing was, you know, you really have to be oppressed. You have to know what the other side looks like, right? The second thing is you've got to know what the source of freedom is, that no one has been put in a position of authority over somebody else. We were all, as we said, we were all created equal.
That's right.
So only you can allow, you, me, everybody else out there, only we can allow somebody to be in a position of authority over them. And we do that by either, you know, moving to a country that we, you know, agree with their constitution or their form of government, or we stay someplace that we were born, that we said, okay, yeah, I like this place. But in this place, we know the source of our freedom comes from God, right? Those unalienable rights. Yeah.
Would you say, is this a fair statement, or how would you phrase this? People allow experience tyranny because they allow it. Would you say that that's a fair statement, at least in America? We have experienced...
In fact, there's a phrase, you know, we get the government we deserve. And we always think about that in terms of America because we vote. But it's the same concept in a communist country or authoritarian country, because as it says again in our Declaration of Independence, you know, when these abuses become more than the people can bear, it is their right and their duty to overthrow that government. So you're exactly right. Now, the cost of that, it's a different question, but the choice is always ours, right?
That's right. And we paid the price, I say, a couple times. One, when we fought for our independence, it started in 1775, and another time in 1861, where we fought 900,000 casualties, folks. 600,000 of those were deaths in the American Civil War, okay? So it was two great fights that we fought for the proposition that all men are created equal. Right. And it's not because it's here in America. It's because we fought our and we gave blood to this soil for our freedom.
Yep. So another good question, you know, that we have to ask ourselves is, you know, what does it take to maintain that freedom? Right. Mm-hmm. The first thing is, in our case, for us to maintain our freedom is our Constitution and our Bill of Rights. You know, if we're speaking generally, obviously it means that we have to defend those unalienable rights so that no one can take them from us or interfere with them. So we are fortunate to have, you know, people who, in our founding fought to ensure that those Bill of Rights were included in our Constitution as the first 10 amendments. But you also have to fight to maintain those rights, right? The Constitution is only a piece of paper. It cannot defend itself. Mm-hmm. And so it's not something we can just, you know, from our Army days, it's not like a fire and forget round, right? You can't just say, oh, here, we've signed the paper and all is good. You have to continue to fight for that.
Like Jason has said, we've repeated a lot and we're going to say it a lot more. We are endowed by our Creator with unalienable rights. Now, you got to understand, and I mentioned it earlier, as America has pushed God out of our consciousness, okay, we are taking away the source of our liberty, our freedom in our life. Now, that's why the second tenet of this podcast is the importance of America's Judeo-Christian heritage. Now, we don't say that in the context of we're here to convert somebody to Christianity. From a very practical sense, every nation, for it to be prosperous, for it to be secure, for it to be long-lasting, it needs guardrails, a moral context to drive from that is based on natural laws of man. And Jason's going to speak to that in greater detail here from John Locke. In fact, Jason, the other day you and I were having a conversation about France in the context of, France has a constitution, but they don't necessarily have a moral foundation. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So, no, France is another good example. As you said, they do have a constitution. But like Rome and Greece, they weren't necessarily founded on the concept that our rights came from God, nor was there a whole lot of moral choices that were being made. You know, if you remember back to the French Revolution, 1789-ish, you had, you know, people who, if they were upset with somebody else, they were off with their head. They were chopping off heads with the guillotines, right? Mm-hmm. And it got to a fever pitch. Right. It was there was not a whole lot of more, as you say, I love the way you put it, you know, these moral guideposts, these boundaries that are supposed to keep us in what we can keep as a free society. But in France during that French Revolution, that's not what was happening. It was the rule of the mob. It was passions were ruling rather than the rule of law. And anytime you get that, which is why our founders were so vehemently opposed to a true democracy. Because
can I add something to that? Mm-hmm. In fact, in the context of moral guideposts and moral boundaries and this is what this in the Winston-Salem witch trials, I'm going off script again. You guys know that some people were accused of being witches, obviously women, and there were people that were killed because of that, okay? Approximately 35 people were killed because of that. Now, that's horrible. It's detestable. What finally stopped it was a Christian man went to a judge who was Christian and saying, these people are not being judged with due process. And he referred to the Bible, to a story in the Old Testament, and says, and he listed the specific needs or that steps that were taken in the Old Testament to assure what we know today is due process. And that judge stopped it all. Mm-hmm. Now, that's horrible. I mean, that this happened altogether, but it was religious men in this case that stopped it. Now, compare that to Europe, including France. They also had their own witch trials, but you don't hear about it. Thousands, I'll say again, thousands of quote-unquote witches were put to death for the same reason, or burned at the stake. And by the way, and this comes from David Barton, wall builders, a great American. And so that's where having a moral foundation in our, in the context of the United States, it's America's Judeo-Christian heritage. So
in your case, yeah. The example you gave in Salem, they had something to point to say, wait a minute. You know, we're way off the reservation, so to speak. We're way out of bounds with what we are proclaiming to be our guideposts. So having that, those sort of moral boundaries is essential. And that's really, I mean, in a larger sense, that's what this episode series is about, the fact that the way that we were created equal, and the way that God intended us to live with life, liberty, and be able to pursue happiness or property, that's what, you know, we're explaining. And the sources for those, the way that those ideas were planted in the founders' heads was because of these political philosophers we're talking about. It's not that the philosophers had the ideas. I mean, the ideas were given to man. They were written on our hearts from the very beginning. It just, as I said, took us a while to embrace that. And there were a few significant sources, as we mentioned, on how they framed the Declaration of Independence and subsequently the U.S. Constitution. And there's, you know, those three primary sources that they use. And those are the Bible. You know, the Bible verses are all throughout John Locke's Second Treatise of Government. And then you have John Locke's Second Treatise of Government, which is the second one, which was heavily cited and used by our founding fathers. And then third was Montesquieu's The Spirit of the Laws, which relied a lot on what Locke had done. His previous work, he'd taken some of what he had done and then expounded upon it a little bit more.
Yeah. And as we wrap up part one of this two-part series, I want to add that if you want to study the foundations of the American legal system, Jason, if you can think which Old Testament book where we get a lot of our, you know, judicial system from, if you could think of it, but there are different reasons. I think it was Exodus. Okay?
Well, Exodus, I know, like right around the chapter 20, I think, is where they start talking about. That's the Ten Commandments and so forth. But they in Exodus, they do talk about the judges. Having men of over groups of 10 and 50, etc.
There we go. And you can look them up. But and there are different ways you can read a book. You can read it to study. In terms of the Bible, it's a very practical, you know, manual for living. Okay. Now, we're just looking at this right now from the perspective of how to have a prosperous, secure nation, okay? And like we said, it needs guideposts. So if you want to study, you know, American history, in the Old Testament, Jason mentions the book of Exodus is one good way. So that's why the importance of the America's Judeo-Christian heritage is a part of what we do, one of the second major tenets. So with that, great job, Jason. This is the end of part one of part two. Please go to patriotcoalitionlive.com, and we appreciate your support, especially your monthly support, patriotcoalitionlive.com/support. You can get our podcasts, which are released once a week, at least one, sometimes an extra episode on Tuesdays from all the places, the major sources where you get your podcast, and at PatriotCoalitionLive.com. Please leave us a 5-star rating. Things, places like Spotify, Apple Podcast. We appreciate that. Please do leave it for us. And with that, appreciate your attention, guys. We'll see you next week for part 2.
See you next week.
Take care.